Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us this week, and it's a great pleasure to have him here, is Republican gubernatorial candidate and Westchester County Executive Rob Astorino. Mr. Astorino is currently serving a second term as county executive after being reelected by a wide margin to the county executive's office in November 2013. He ran on the Republican and conservative lines in a county with a 2-to-1 Democratic enrollment advantage and a population of approximately 1 million. Before taking office as county executive, Mr. Astorino had a successful career in the radio and television industry. He was station manager and program director of the Catholic Channel on Sirius XM satellite radio and hosted a weekly radio show from St. Patrick's Cathedral with the Cardinal Archbishop of New York. In 2001, he helped launch ESPN Radio in New York and became the station's senior producer. Mr. Astorino, a SAG-AFTRA union member, was first elected to public office at age 21. Serving as a member of the Mount Pleasant Board of Education, he went on to serve for 12 years as councilman in the town of Mount Pleasant, including 6 years as deputy supervisor. In 2003, he was elected to the Westchester County Board of Legislators. Mr. Astorino earned a Bachelor of Arts degree in communication at Fordham University, where he also minored in Spanish and political science. In 2001, he studied in Barcelona, Spain, and received a Spanish immersion diploma from the Enforex School of International Studies. Mr. Astorino and his wife, Sheila, are raising 3 young children. Welcome, Rob Astorino.
Alan, hola.
Hola.
Don't you love Barcelona?
No, there's nothing better than Barcelona. Barcelona is one of those cities where I could live.
Me too. Seriously, and Spain as a country.
Yeah.
And Barcelona is just a beautiful, beautiful city.
And you speak fluent Spanish, right?
I speak enough Spanish. I enjoy it. We use it as much as we can.
You get a lot of political credit for that.
Yeah, you know, but I just love using it. I always have.
Yeah.
And I guess now it comes in handy. But in Westchester, for instance, you mentioned a million people. We have 22% Hispanic population, so 220,000 Hispanics in Westchester.
So, Rob Astorino, people say to me, what is he, crazy? Why is he running? Cuomo's got, you know, we'll probably have $50 million in the bank by the time he runs. He often runs on a program of public financing. So.
Well, it's not until you reach $100 million do you qualify.
So, but my question to you is, you had a predecessor years ago who ran against Papa Cuomo from Westchester. How do you think you could beat him?
Money doesn't buy love, it doesn't buy happiness, and ultimately it can't buy an election. And you know what? The people are going to decide this race, not Andrew Cuomo and not his inner circle, and all the bullying he does is not going to matter at all eventually, because we have two very different views of what New York should be about, really and truly. And you can see Andrew Cuomo starting to implode now, because politics and government is not about checking boxes and moving on, right? It's about a core philosophy. It's about leadership, and that means really leading in a way and not talking out of both sides of your mouth, which is really what's been happening. Look, when I got elected in 2009, I heard the same thing, Alan. I was 30 points down to start the race. My opponent had mountains and mountains of money. He had the Democratic machine. He had all the endorsements. He had everything. But you know what he didn't have? He didn't have the right ideas, and he didn't have the people behind him at the end of the day. And I knew if we raised enough money to get our message out, that we would be in it at the end. Now, I didn't think we'd win by 15 points. In, you mentioned 2-to-1 Democratic county. That almost sounds nice to me, because it's 49% Democrat, 24% Republican. So it's tough sledding, but what people would say is, how could you win? How, you can't possibly win. Why run? And I said, you know what? I'm going to take my message everywhere, and I'm going to go where Republicans are politically uncomfortable going sometimes, and that is to the barrios, to the neighborhoods, to the inner city. And I want my message to be heard by everybody, and I don't leave a vote on the table. And so we built up amazing relationships with our African-American leaders and ordinary people. We built up amazing relationships with the Hispanic community. We had Muslim Americans. We have, by the way, we're the eighth largest Jewish county in America. So we have a significant Jewish population, and we made enormous friendships and partnerships, not only in politics, but in government. And as such, I won, and then we governed and did what we said we were going to do.
Which was what?
Well, we had to lower taxes because people were being taxed out of their homes. Businesses were just leaving Westchester for Connecticut or elsewhere.
Have you been able to substantially lower taxes?
We have. We've lowered the tax levy, either cut it or held it firm with a zero increase for four straight years, and another was coming in for a fifth year. But we did not, quote, balance the budget on the backs of the poor. No. There's no such thing as an essential service if you can't afford it. And so much money was being thrown overboard, wasted, at the expense of core services that were needed. Now, did we have disagreements or clashes? Yeah, we did. But collaboratively, we were able to reach consensus, and that's the way we built not only bipartisan support, but we're able to run a government. Because when I came in, there were 13 Democrats and 4 Republicans on the county board, some of whom were just hell-bent on just being obstructionists. Others were hell-bent on moving a government along and working with us, and that's the coalition we built. And I'll give you an example, United Black Clergy of Westchester. So I came in, and they were a little concerned at first. You know, here's this Republican, right? He's got to cut taxes and slow down spending. And what did I do? I said, look, I have a budget to put together. We have a $166 million deficit, so I can't add spending and I'm not going to raise taxes. But that doesn't mean I don't care about people in need. I do. So help me with this budget. Tell me what works and what doesn't, because what doesn't work is unfair to continue and perpetuate, because that's wasting money at the expense of either new programs or bolstering what is working.
Did they?
Oh, it was amazing. So here's the lesson I learned. The first year, I put together a budget, and we cut and we found savings, but we did not include them. Not purposely. Yeah. It was just, you know, my first year. So I come out with a budget, and, you know, all hell breaks loose, right? And so I meet with them, and they said, you're asking us to react to something. Make us be part of it. So next year, July comes, where we start the budget process. And in the early fall, I bring the United Black Clergy all together. And I said, all right, here's our budget, here's our projections, here's our problems, et cetera. I need your help. So we tore apart the Department of Social Services budget, which is a $500 million budget for us. And you know what? Their eyes were opened and my eyes were opened. And through that, we were able to compromise and identify programs which needed more money and get rid of programs that shouldn't have any more.
So, for example, what'd you get rid of?
Oh, boy, I'm trying to think of some of the things. Well, we had an issue where the county was providing the service for the state of New York for our Section 8 vouchers. Now, this program wouldn't have added anything to Section 8.
Again, for
rental income.
Right.
It provides the gap. It's not a bad program, but the state is obligated to do it. They had a longstanding contract with the county to administer it on behalf of the state. Lo and behold, we're losing $1 million on this. So I said, well, why would we do this for the state if we're losing money? Let's turn it back to them. You know, screaming and yelling. But what we did is we got rid of the program, put it back to the state. They did it. Now the county is making money off rental income. Nothing changed. You wouldn't know a difference if you walked in there. The people are still being served, and now the state is contracting with an independent contractor. So everything worked fine. We saved money. The state is providing the service, and the people who needed the help in Section 8 are getting it. The old, you know, narrative would have been, you can't stop. You got to do the work. Well, we couldn't. We couldn't afford it. But let me talk about child care, okay? Daycare subsidies. We were losing multiple millions of dollars every year on our daycare subsidies, simply because we were the most generous county. In other words, asking parents to pay very little for their own children for daycare. And yet, we were well below what New York City charges their own parents and most other counties. So we proposed, in order to find a healthy balance between what we could afford, what the taxpayers, because they've already reached their limit, what they should be obligated to pay, and what the parents who are receiving this service and benefit should be able to do. So we brought the United Black Clergy in and some of the Hispanic groups and others who might have been affected by this disproportionately, and we explained the situation. And we said, if we raise the parent share a little bit, and I understand it might be a hardship, but if we raise that a little bit, on average $1 or $2 a day for their own children, this will allow us to save the program, it'll keep it whole, as well as we can expand the program and have more families take part in this. So it was actually a very good compromise that we reached, because ultimately I wanted 33% parent share. We settled on 27. It started at 15. But everyone gave, and the program was saved, the program was strengthened, more families were on it, and the taxpayers didn't take a beating.
So what is it about your success? I mean, you've done so well. You've been elected and reelected.
Well, they've tried to portray me just as the typical Democratic playbook is these days. If you're a Republican, then therefore you are a right-wing Tea Party extremist who hates everybody.
Okay, I want to stop you right there. That's true. And one of the accusations is...
It's true about the playbook, right?
Yeah, that's right. That's exactly right. But is there any truth to the idea that you are a social conservative on the major issues that usually turn Democratic voters on?
That's probably correct. However, and let me get back to how we did it, and then I'll answer that question.
Sure.
So we collaboratively worked with Democrats on the board. We collaboratively worked with all the stakeholders, the nonprofits, the different agencies, and that's how we were able to get budgets done without raising taxes, with shoring up the services. And I ran on three things: protecting taxpayers, promoting economic growth, because that's the most important of the three, basically, because as the economy expands, sure, and businesses come in, more people go back to work, there's less pressure, and preserving the essential services, which we did. It means, though, that the status quo, or as I might start calling it, the status quo-mo, has to be broken. Because the status quo benefits only a certain amount of people at the expense of many others, and it just assumes that we need to keep wasting money so everyone stays quiet. We can't do that anymore. We're the highest tax state in America. We have the worst business climate. People are fleeing the state in record numbers. Something is wrong.
Well, but hasn't he answered all of that?
He hasn't.
Rob Astorino, I want everybody to know who I'm talking to here. Hasn't he answered that? Say, well, I'm for reducing taxes.
Is anyone doing a U-turn right now in their U-Haul? Seriously, we've had 400,000 people leave this state in the last 3 years. Do you think anything that Andrew Cuomo has done right now in a political year is going to make you turn around? We are still the worst business climate in America. We've got the worst corruption. You know, as I look down the road to that state capitol, and quite frankly, a lot of it, you know, some of both parties, but for the most part, this is a Democratic culture corruption right now in this state Senate and in the Assembly, specifically the Assembly. That has to be corrected. And Andrew Cuomo sitting there with his Moreland Commission holding it over their heads, and now all of a sudden stopping it purely for political reasons. There's a reason why the U.S. Attorney's Office is looking into this, and rightfully so. The governor was not interested in real reform on ethics. He was interested in getting some of his agenda done, and he did that by extorting the legislature. So I think, you know, the tables might be turned on this, because all of a sudden we're hearing that the governor's top staff, maybe you find out the governor himself, was making sure the investigations were going a different direction. We're making sure subpoenas were squashed. We're making sure the Democratic Party was off limits. We're making sure that his contributors were off limits, like the Real Estate Board of New York and other special interest groups. What about the casinos? All of a sudden, the sightings, and we're going to pick a winner sometime later this year. And oh, by the way, we're going to have a million fundraisers along the way that all these casino operators who have potential license to get from the state are all now being invited to buy, oh, I don't know, a couple tables at $25,000 a ticket or whatever it is. What we did in Westchester is we put term limits in immediately. That was one of the first things I did.
Term limits for?
For elected officials, for the county executive, and for the legislature, because I really believe...
And the term limits in your case are two?
It's three.
Three, okay.
Three terms and six terms for the legislature, so 12 total. That's plenty. My God, that's plenty of time for anybody to serve in a position. And not only after that, you get lazy, but that's, I mean, even before that, corruption can come in if you don't have a good moral compass. But at least that turns people over and gets some new blood and new ideas in a place that desperately needs it.
Should there be term limits for people who serve in the legislature?
Yeah, definitely. I absolutely agree with that. No question about it. I mean, look at these guys. I mean, some are really good, but some are there for way too long.
Public financing of candidates?
No.
Because?
Right now, we are strained with our tax dollars to provide the basic services for people in need. And now we're going to take public tax dollars and give it to some corrupt politicians, but any politician, to do robocalls? No. I don't think so. I think that just changes the problem somewhere else.
How do you raise money? You call donors up?
Yeah, I mean, look, it's not a fun thing, but I think it's important that candidates build their own support. I love when we get a $10 check or a $25 check from people around New York. I love that, and I love to read the comments when they donate online, because they are passionate, they are involved, they are deeply concerned, and that $25 or that $10 is more meaningful to that person than a $25,000 check written out by some business. I would say I'll take them both, but I would much prefer that $25 check from a lot of people.
Rob Astorino, let's go to some of the issues. Fracking.
You mean natural gas exploration?
That's what I mean.
I don't use the F word.
Okay. That's funny.
I think the word fracking has been co-opted. And I think, you know, natural gas exploration, clean natural gas exploration, first and foremost, the public health has to be at the forefront. So anything that we would do would rely upon the experts. And so far, there are 30 other states that have studied this issue that have proceeded with natural gas exploration. Democrats and Republicans, environmental groups, businesses, et cetera, all working together. But the health departments of those states have set up the proper safeguards along with the environmental, like in our case, the DEC, would be very actively involved. You would set that up first before you allowed them to do anything in the land.
Well, they've tried that here, but they never got a report.
Well, look, Andrew Cuomo is sitting on his hands for pure political reasons. It's the reason why I asked for the health commissioner's resignation. That was part of it.
Do you think he resigned because of you?
I don't think so. But, I mean, I certainly made the call, and it was interesting that the day after is when he was thrown overboard or asked to resign.
That's funny. Did you know it was coming?
I swear to God, I didn't. I mean, I still remember this. We were in, the next day, we were in Troy at the Dinosaur Barbecue having dinner after an event I did before we started to come home, and I got these texts and emails that Dr. Shaw was resigning, and you know,
see,
like,
I got a call just the other day, Rob, if I may call you that, from a guy in the bowels of that bureaucracy who said that he resigned because he wasn't allowed to do his own thing.
I'm sure that's very true. Look, if he had done his thing, he would have been done already, and he probably, since he talked to the people in Pennsylvania, the health departments in Pennsylvania who looked at this issue, came to the conclusion that there is no public health issue. You do need, clearly, some regulations. I mean, we're not telling the companies, come in, rape the land, and leave. My God, who would do that? I mean, I have kids. You think I want clean water in their cups? Of course I do. Clean air? Of course I do. But to say to literally tens of thousands of New Yorkers, you don't have the opportunity to have a job. You don't have the opportunity to have wealth. No matter what your skill or education level is, we're going to keep you down so you don't have this opportunity. To me, that's a dereliction of duty. What the governor should be doing, what he should have done already, and now for purely political reasons, I think because he's held hostage by a few people, he is not permitting this state to move forward. And
well, but it was clear, Rob Astorino, that in the very beginning, he was for it. At least it was clear to me.
Until he was against it.
Well, right. I think he got bit in the posterior by people who thought the clean water was being threatened.
But you know what? Let's ask the state of Colorado that has a Democratic governor who came in and put together the environmental groups and the business groups and said, how do we do this in a reasonable, responsible way? We're going to safeguard the water table. And by the way, the water table is 300 feet. The drilling is about 2 miles below. And New York has the advantage now. We're not first to do this. We'd be 31st to do this. So we will have learned from everyone else. The president of the United States.
Yes, he is.
In his State of the Union address spent, I don't know how many minutes talking about this. Little did we know it become a national security issue with what's going on in Russia and Ukraine, etc. But nothing could make us more independent of the sheiks in the Middle East than our own natural gas reserves here in America, where we could become an exporter, where people would rely on us and our values as opposed to an importer held hostage by the Middle East. You have the EPA, the Interior Department, the Energy Department, all of which has said this is clean if done correctly, and it should go forward. And we are blessed in this state. You look at a map of the shale, Marcellus and Utica, I mean, it covers a vast part of our state.
It does. Rob, I could talk about this, as you know, for hours, but I wanted to go to the next thing, which is on the social conservative scale.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I didn't get back to it.
No, that's okay. On a woman's right to choose.
Yeah. Look, I'm pro-life. That's no secret.
No.
It was no secret in Westchester, and they spent $2.5 million beating me up every day on this issue. And you know what pro-choice women said in Westchester? It doesn't matter. We're more concerned about his abilities here because for 44 years, it's been legal in New York State. 41 years ago, the Supreme Court made this decision. So this is a boogeyman used by the Andrew Cuomos of the world to not have to talk about why 400,000 people have left the state, why we're the highest tax state in America, why our businesses are fleeing because this is the worst business climate, why the ethics goo is all over the place because of the disastrous record of corruption. So what I will not do, I respect the law very much. I know this is a pro-choice state, and I know there's a law. But what I will not do is expand it up to birth, which is what Governor Cuomo would do in his bill. And that's why I, and almost the vast majority of New Yorkers, by the way, believe that that is way beyond what is reasonable in New York. So my focus is going to be, how do we put people back to work? How do we get an education system in this state that is not second best, but best, because we spend the most money in America in this state on education, and we're 32nd in results.
So what in particular stands up and salutes to you about the education system?
Well, thumbs down to Common Core. Okay, I very
strongly...
Well,
aren't the things in Common Core good things?
The standards are good. Raising standards in the state should be absolutely what we strive for. But you can take different roads to get to high standards.
Sure.
What I don't agree with is, in this case, in many ways, corporate America, Bill Gates, federal government dictating how the standards and the curriculum really, because the curriculum has to follow the standards, how the curriculum will be in New York.
But if we don't achieve the standards, Rob, don't we get into a situation where, as a good Republican, you know that we have to compete, and right now we're failing?
There's no question. But I think you can say there are great public schools in New York, fantastic public schools throughout New York. How do they do it? Let's look at these public schools, and quite frankly, let's look at any school, whether it's parochial or religious, it doesn't matter, and how did they do what they did? How do they achieve what they achieved? I can tell you, just to my own core, I think we should be relying on our great teachers and our parents and our administrators on a local level to deal with these issues, and not some faceless bureaucrat in Washington, D.C. And that's really what I'm coming for. And let's make sure that we have the best. But this is one particular road that is untested. It is completely untested. Teachers were not involved in the validation committee or the writing committee of this curriculum. And so we're going on this massive, untested education system now, where even Bill Gates admits, we'll find out our answers in about a decade, whether it worked or not. No, thank you. And meanwhile, we've got 10 years of kids that are going to be starting off as lab mice and ended up at lab rats by the time this is over. I'd much prefer keep it New York-based, New York educators, New York teachers, New York parents deciding how we get down that road to a much better standard in higher education. We were you just look at education in New York. My Regents diploma meant a lot.
Indeed.
It meant a lot when I graduated public school in 1985. And maybe it's not meaning as much today, but we can make it better. And one thing we can't forget about, because all of our kids learn in different ways. They have different abilities. They have different needs. My wife is a special ed teacher. And so
God bless her.
I know it. And, she deals with some kids who have some real hurdles to overcome in life. And she deals with individual education plans and special ed kids and autism and all that challenge. These kids in a classroom are expected to learn, just like average kids who are falling behind a little bit. They're all expected under Common Core to learn the same thing at the same time and get to the same conclusion. It just doesn't happen. Meanwhile, you've got kids who are accelerating who are going to be held back because the rest of the class hasn't caught up yet. So I have some big problems with this. I know the teachers' union has some big problems with it because I think it is unfair. I do think teachers should be evaluated, but I think it's completely unfair and unrealistic to evaluate them on something that they weren't even prepared for. That I have a problem with.
So, Rob Astorino, we're certainly delighted that you're with us, and we only have a minute or so, but I guess what people really want to know is, can you win?
Absolutely. And you know what? Ultimately, it's going to be the voters of this state that are going to determine. It's April, by the way, so it's the first inning.
But you don't have $50 million, and you won't have $50
million. I have 60. No. Then I woke up. I'll have enough that I need to make sure I get my message out. I'm very confident of that at the end of the day. And all of Andrew Cuomo's, I'm sure, imminent attacks on right-wing Tea Party extremism nonsense is going to be overshadowed by the fact that people want to know why he chose to run into Common Core faster than any other governor to take the money, and now we have a disastrous implementation plan. Why everyone is leaving, you see the jobs report last week? I mean, it's embarrassing. Embarrassing. You had major parts of New York State with zero growth in a year and some with a tick. That's not going to put people back to work. That's not going to help people of all different skill levels. So unless we do the radical reform that Andrew Cuomo promised in January of 2010, and he hasn't delivered in any way, everything from here on is pure politics now. So I can bring that agenda, just like we did in Deep Blue Westchester, to the rest of the state.
So when you come back the next time, we want to talk to you about all the things we didn't get to this time, like the State University of New York and whether it should be a business incubator and on and on. Rob Astorino, thank you so much for being here and doing this. It's very important to us to be able to have you here, and we appreciate it.
I'll be back anytime. I appreciate your time.
Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gastina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.